Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 358. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
Hello.
How are you guys doing today?
Good. How about yourself?
Good. Well, man, oh man, oh man, I gotta tell you, it is so great to take my shorts off the shelf and start wearing them again.
I thought, I'm gonna let you finish that sentence. I thought you were gonna say it's so great to take my shorts off. It's
like, No.
Thanks very much.
No, I really appreciate that. No. Looking across the guy that lives behind us, he's been out sunbathing, and it's just like, man, is it that nice? Yes, it is.
It is
nice.
Broke out the short sleeve shirts.
I'm doing a round of golf with my son today. So
oh, fun! About that. Good for you. Well, hey, I'm really curious about that AlterConf that you went to, Phil. Can you just give us a brief recap of it?
You know, it was really great. I mean, there weren't as many people there as I'd hoped there would have been, but it was well attended. It was held over at the VidCo space, and no, I'm sorry, Lead Pages. Same building, over at Lead Pages. And, you know, as we had Ash Dryden on with us, she was as charming in person as she was on the podcast.
Oh, great.
And put together a wonderful group of, as they say, marginalized people in the workplace and how to support them in tech and gaming industries. And it was really well done. I think the highlight for me was probably learning a lot about the, you know, insurance plans and how they apply to the LGBT community, especially transgender. A speaker by the name of Marie Fromm was there, and she works at Medtronic. And the first time she'd done a presentation on the impact of existing health plans and how they impact the transgender community. That was probably the most interesting one to me. And then there was also some folks talking about, you know, different things like the sort of cult of or the prominence of drinking in the tech space. You know, we have, everything's always a happy hour or a tech happy hour, that sort of a thing. So really well put together. When I was speaking with Ash, they rarely come back and do cities again, but they are thinking they're going to start doing that. But I did find out that they were not able to pay for the conference. They actually lost money on the conference in Minneapolis. So if you feel like making a donation, go to alterconf.com and make a donation. I think it was really well worth the time. Oh, and also there was a great presentation on maternity, you know, and motherhood in tech from Sarah Olson over at the Nerdery. She did a great job. So good stuff.
You know, I really wonder about what's going on, because, you know, a lot of people are following the path of Europe in terms of time off and so on. I know that wasn't the focus of the conference, certainly, but it just seems like people are really, really struggling with all the different variables, basically, in humans and people working. And I don't know. It's good to have a conference and get this stuff out in the open and really talk about it.
Yeah, it really
figure
is.
It out.
It really is really very interesting. So yeah. I enjoyed it a great deal. A day well spent. So if you know you happen to be in a city where this conference rolls into next, make sure you check it out. I think you'll find it worthwhile. So
excellent.
So that was AlterConf.
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 So, you know, I've been kind of watching Jamf software because Dean Hager, who's the new CEO there, he and I worked together. He was one of the executive vice presidents at Lawson Software when I was there.
Oh.
And liked Dean a lot and worked with him on the IBM partnership quite a bit as we were putting that together. And he's now the CEO of Jamf, and they've moved into that building. I'm trying to remember what it used to be.
What it used to be and what it still is the world's ugliest building downtown.
It isn't terribly attractive. That's for sure. 100 Washington Square. Right.
I don't think it doesn't look that bad.
Oh my God. It's like gun turrets for windows, for God's sake.
It's got that classic 1964 World's Fair.
Doesn't it look like a setting for Dragnet?
It looks like an FBI building.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, I did not know that Code 42 signed a lease for some 60,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Jamf did it earlier, and Dean Hager was singing the praises of the building and how it's being positioned really as a tech building. And the Wi-Fi is great, and the internet connections are great, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so, Phil, would you ever consider moving into something like that?
Nope.
Well, but isn't it right on the light rail line?
Yeah, a butt ugly building. I've never been inside, but I just can't imagine it's anything, you know. You know, that's a building that was sort of built around cubes in my brain.
Right.
I can't imagine it being, I don't know. I'm sorry. It's just one of those buildings that's just an eyesore to me. So,
okay.
I mean, yes, it does offer things like, you know, it is on close to the light rail. It's closer to the, you know, Metro Transit. It's, you know,
and restaurants.
In restaurants. Well, even that area is not riddled with the best restaurants. I mean, you have to walk into the core of downtown to get to, because that's right on the edge. But the street will be smoother in front of it because they're doing work on Washington. But I don't know. We talked about spaces like that when we were looking for space, and it's just not, I just don't think it's really creative enough. I don't think it's too industrial for me. I'm sure companies like Jamf, who have, you know, were really spilling out of their office space at the Grain Exchange building, and that Grain Exchange building, once you get off the Grain Exchange floor, it's really nothing special. So I'm sure they really appreciate the added space. But again, I suppose I shouldn't be quite so outspoken on it when I haven't really ever been inside it. So
there you go.
Probably very cool inside.
But just from an outside standpoint, you don't like it.
Yeah, it's just, but again, it's probably convenient. I don't know what, I believe that the parking is going to be an issue. I know they have a surface lot there. I don't think they have any, parking downtown.
Parking
is just,
or anything?
Yeah, but, you know, parking downtown is going to be kind of a challenge, you know, now with the new Wells Fargo headquarters there.
Right.
The stadium, and, you know, it's going to be a little bit crowded in those ramps. I haven't talked to any of our former neighbors at Coco, but that ramp was getting difficult to find space in on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah.
But that's the challenge. You got to pay for parking if you're downtown.
So, Phil, do you think we should just, when we have old buildings like this, we should just tear
them up? Just blow them up. No.
Something new that's pleasing to your eye?
Yeah. I don't know. Again, that is personal taste. I know that is. I would just assume move into some older spaces. And it's, I think that I always associate a lot of tech buildings with that hardwood floor, brick and timber thing. So that to me, that, and that's probably more startup than tech, but I have all these.
You're going
really
off on a tangent.
I have these really strong views on just a building.
Well, then let's talk about somebody that's in your building then, and then you can kind of think about and visualize your building. How about that? There's a company, I think it's pronounced Luke, Tim.
Look,
do you know?
Look. I would say look. It's Look.
So they're
LWK.
Yeah, LWK. Okay, so they're a premium menswear company dedicated to building a gentleman's uniform. And why are they in a tech podcast, Mr. Elliott?
They use an algorithm to best match the products that they send you on. It's a subscription, so similar to Trunk Club, which is probably most known in this space.
Yeah.
They send you some items every month or every quarter, whatever your frequency is, that are handpicked for you. And they're using an algorithm to best match based upon, you know, what they've sent in the past and what you've liked and what you haven't liked. And it's interesting. Now, one of the barriers I think that they have to adoption is they don't accept any returns.
Yeah, you're committed.
Oh, yeah. You're kidding.
Like Trunk Club, you can like say, hey, I don't like these jeans. And for stuff like clothes, I mean, sometimes they just don't fit. They may look good, but they just don't fit right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Being stuck with it seems, I don't know.
That seems like a lot. Yeah, but you know, when you're a guy like me, where you can just buy everything off the rack, fits perfectly, you know, because I'm exactly the male model size. So.
Yes, exactly. No problem. That's you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I look at the three of us and talk about three physically different human beings. You know, I mean, it's how could, you know, even if you know the size, this stuff's never, I mean, I'm sorry, stuff never fits. And I'm like, go ahead, Phil.
I'm sorry. I took a shot at Trunk Club probably 2 years ago.
Oh, really?
A year and a half. Yeah. I said, give this a shot. So you spend a lot of time either on the phone or online filling out forms and talking to, you know, dressers or designers or, you know, people that are supposedly help you get an idea of what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And I spent, you know, and I spent a great deal of time saying, I'm tall and I'm skinny, but I do have a little bit of a gut. I'm looking for this sort of thing. And they sent me my first Trunk Club. It was really awful.
Oh, no.
None of it, absolutely none of it fit. It was like, well, did you not hear the whole I'm tall thing?
Wow.
So it was really a disappointment. So I just basically bailed. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So you did an Amazon Echo with Trunk Club.
Yes, I did an Amazon Echo with Trunk Club. It's what I do. I did it. You know, I did the same thing with the Fossil Q watch too, by the way. So I think I told you that went back as well. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, take a look at it. It's online. I was on earlier this morning and couldn't get onto the site, but now it looks like it's been repaired. So I'm guessing because of TechCrunch articles and things like that, it's going a little bit nuts. So
that's good for them.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So, so what's the latest in Target there, Timbo?
Well, this was mine.
Yeah. Oh, it was.
Oh,
come on. I thought everything that Target is Steve.
I've been trying to hold off the Target stories because retail has some aspects of tech, but no.
You have grown tired of them.
Well, but here's what's interesting about this. This is, and I'm looking at it obviously because of the Internet of Things space. That's how I came across the article. And I just I put a new link in there to the actual Origin article, which came from Twice Magazine, which is it's about the consumer electronics business, but they talk about this pilot program that Target's rolling out to 550 of its 1,800 stores that's going to be a connected care section. So it's going to be medical grade products, you know, blood pressure monitors, pain management tools, wearables of all kinds. It's they're really going to expand the category. And the original article that I had in there from Business Insider, they're trying to pitch their report. Which is like a $500 report on the wearables for health space. Mm-hmm. But you know, the projections are, I think it's 221 or 271 billion will be spent within the next 3 years on, health related wearables. And so this is globally obviously, but it's a really interesting space. And typically here's what I find really interesting about this. Typically mass merchants like Target don't get into any category pre-peak. They always wait until it's just about going to peak. Then they get in and they ride the thing over the crest of the bell curve. And as it starts to get into the post-peak area, then they start to trim their selections and then they finally get out of the category. And does it feel like we're that close? I mean, does it feel like we're pre-peak or really close to peak so a mass merchant would get in? I'm just not sure about that.
Well, I think we're at the end of the beginning. So
do you? Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. To quote Sir Winston.
So you think there'll be an acceleration?
Yeah. And I think that there's money to be made by people selling stuff like Fitbits, which you know, are pretty widespread these days. And then maybe something like the next generation Apple Watch or some other kind of wearable that does more. And, you know, it's like a passive ID kind of a deal. You know, this whole juxtaposition of your ID plus, body information, fitness information. Mm-hmm. that's an interesting place. And, you know, the Target's main customers are getting older. And, you know, I think it's a smart thing. But I agree, we're at the very beginning of this, you know, this whole category. But the first part of it, I think we're near the end of. So I think we're going to see a cresting of the Fitbit style stuff, and then something will come after that.
Well, what was really interesting is I had a conversation with my doc, a guy I've seen for 27 years, and he's a real techno weenie. I mean, this guy buys everything. He's a real early adopter. And
God, and we don't know anybody like that, do we?
Well, no, so no. It kind of pisses me off, though. Sometimes I'm in there and I'm like, John, you know, I came in here for a reason. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's right. We'll start talking about my health issue or whatever. But, yeah, you know, I can barely talk, John. Could I have a throat culture, please? but one of the things we talked about was the Apple Watch and the fact that it does, in fact, certain kinds of, you know, oxygen monitoring and blood monitoring and so forth. But it hasn't been FDA approved, so they can't market it as that.
They can't activate it in the watch, right?
And his thing was, he said, boy, if there was any way to measure creatinine, is that how you pronounce it?
Sure. Yeah, and, we'll go with that. That's fine. Yeah,
and then a couple of other indicators. He said, boy, if it could do that, he said it would change so many lives. So we got into this whole discussion about this, and I thought, you know, it's we are really, really close. I don't know if you've heard about the Cardia watch band. Cardia makes these device. I'll put a link in the show notes. Cardia makes this case for the iPhone and the iPad that allows you to do, you know, essentially heart testing. You can, you know, really get into some pretty nitty gritty stuff. Well, now they have a band for your Apple Watch, just got FDA approved. And so there's things like that that are coming out that are really exciting. So
cool. Yeah. Very cool.
Is there anything else going on with mobile devices?
Well, you know, I was just going to say, let's talk apps. I wanted to point out sort of a success story for the Technovation MN folks and our app challenge, our global challenge, the Technovation Global Challenge, where girls, groups of girls, both middle school, high school girl groups, get together, design and market, build an app, a mobile app. One of those was done by one of our teams in Rochester during last year's Technovation Challenge, and it was showcased at the White House Science Fair this year.
Oh, seriously?
So a big win for the girls down in Rochester. There was a Mayo Free Time app, which basically is an app that provides information in and around the Mayo Center, Mayo Clinic in Rochester, if you're there being treated for something, areas around there, what's available, what's accessible for them and things like that. Nice. So, the girls did a great job. So I did want to point that out there. I thought it was a really good, sort of feather in the cap for the local, and Minnesota tech community. So, but also,
and how, wait a second, how old are these girls?
I believe they're a high school team.
Nice. So,
well,
what a great experience.
I can't remember if they're middle school or high school. I'm sorry, Steve. Great stuff. Middle school, I guess.
Very nice.
Hmm.
So, great stuff.
Nice.
And then what else? Metro is supposedly getting an app.
Yeah. The Metro Transit. I wrote up a couple stories about new apps this week. And the first one was the Metro app that interesting. They use animations in the back so it can't be easily falsified, I guess.
Well, that's kind of interesting because as I read through the piece and it's not like an RF code or a QR code or anything like that. It's basically you show it to the driver.
Yeah,
which I find kind of interesting.
It is. It's kind of a low tech solution, but then you have to think about, you know, people could easily, if it was just a static image, they could easily, counterfeit it.
Right.
But they're using this kind of cool animation in the background to get around that.
Seems kind of, you know, you'd think they would use like an Apple Pay or a Google Pay or something like that rather than rely on a.
Not everyone has an iPhone.
Glance.
You know what I mean?
No, right. But. You have to have one of the or the others operating systems. And if you took both versions,
what about those poor people that use Windows? Come on.
They're not taking the bus anyway.
Well, they're probably not taking the bus.
They're social outcasts, so they're not really going anywhere.
There, come on.
I'm kidding. Yes, you're right. You're right. Okay, fine.
You have to be more inclusive. You can't suppose. Your Apple bubble.
I know. Well, believe me, I'm not in that Apple bubble. Now, come on. Don't put me in there with all the other Apple people. I'm special.
You left the Android reservation, and I'm the only one left.
Sorry. You're staying out there all by yourself.
Not that I'm bitter.
We'll give you a hug. We'll give you a hug next time we see you, Tim. So Julio wrote a great article about for the new Viking Stadium, an app that does everything but yell skull. So there'll be an iOS and Android app that basically tells people everything about the new stadium, right? Where the bathrooms are, finding their seats, ordering food, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's like a step-by-step tracking GPS to help you find your seat, which is kind of interesting. You know, I remember probably 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, we were trying to prospect and get inside the Vikings, organization to do some, some pitching for just this sort of thing as far as building an app for them. I'm sorry they had to go out of state. Or they felt they had to go out of state to get the technology, but yeah. It, again, it's an existing app that is making its way around a lot of the pro teams. But what was really interesting about the article to me was what they're doing to make the stadium really tech friendly as far as internet access and cellular service and things like that. Because that is the worst. That's the worst experience about going to Target Center or Target Field is that they're just in really terrible spots.
Exactly. Well, and the mobile networks, especially if it's at rush hour, post rush hour, the mobile networks, the towers have a finite number of of concurrent connections that can happen. And this John Penhalo, vice president of corporate and technology partnerships for the Vikings, says that the super Wi-Fi network they're putting in will be so robust, all 66,000 fans in the stadium could theoretically jump on the Wi-Fi at the same time.
Bullshit.
notice he said theoretically.
But mind if I throw a flag on that one? I'm sorry.
That's right. But also,
embellishment, 25 yard penalty.
No kidding. But also, the stadium's going to be littered with about 2,000 wireless beacons.
Yes.
That'll pinpoint the app users' locations at all times. Sorry, that was not a Freudian slip.
No.
Come on.
I think that I'm anxious to see how that, because I know that Target Center was talking about upgrading all of their work, and I don't think they've ever gotten to it. And Target Field is the same way. I don't know if you've ever tried to send a tweet from Target Field; it's next to impossible.
So, that's what everybody. Yeah, I haven't done that,
which is frustrating.
I actually don't do anything at any events with my phone, nor when I'm driving, nor when I'm parked at a light. Did you see the article this morning in the Strib?
No, I did not.
By the way, they haven't rolled out their new iPad app.
Who, the Strib?
Yeah, it's like, come on, you guys. But anyway. It's
not a great experience.
I'll put a link in the show notes, but it's about the crackdown of Minnesota law enforcement over distracted driving, and they're going along in unmarked cars, and they are using GoPros, and they're using these little cameras that clip on the side, the driver's side, or on both sides, and they can take video and still photos of people texting at lights and so forth, so that when they pull them over and give them a $50 ticket, they have the evidence, basically, that somebody was doing this. And so they're doing it. So they showed this woman texting, they're driving along and she's texting and they pull her over. But I got to tell you that I have been behind so many people where you see them kind of weaving and then all of a sudden they hit the curb and then they pull back onto the road and you come up and they're still texting.
Yep.
It's like, come on, you guys.
Hey, it's important.
That's right. That's right.
I don't know, but I always find myself tempted to do that. And I'll pick up my phone and look at it. And I try to say, don't do it. It's a distraction. Have you ever experimented with those apps that will shut your phone down when you're moving at a certain rate of speed or anything?
Never
like
have.
That?
No.
Tim?
No, because my kids are older now. So
no, nope, never have.
Okay. Okay. Mm.
Well, we should touch on at least one big tech story from this past week, and I want to pass the baton to you, Tim, because you you just seem to have more of a holistic view of what Facebook is up to, and they just had their big F8 event. Fate.
Yeah. So Zuckerberg is big on virtual reality. Apparently, you know, they bought Oculus Rift a year or two ago, and now they've come up and with this camera, which is a very expensive spaceship looking thing for doing 360 degree, imagery. And they're giving away the specs to it so that other companies can actually build these things. Now, the parts that they put this thing together with cost $30,000.
$30,000.
And the article here from The Verge talks about other high-end VR 360 cameras costing up to $60,000. So, you know, they may be onto something, but this is clearly that they want to try to innovate in the space of making the content look as good as possible for Oculus. And I guess that's part of their plan to really move the Facebook platform into this new emerging space. So interesting stuff. They announced a few other things too, but this camera was the most interesting, I thought.
Well, and I look at this and the components are expensive and so on, but when you look at how dominant the Japanese were in video cameras for high-end broadcast production and filmmaking even, and what happened when Red, when the former CEO of Oakley started Red and they came out with the Red cameras, and the price points were, 20% of what Sony and Panasonic and others were selling these cameras for. And they've revolutionized the business. And so maybe somebody will do the same thing with these 360 cameras. I would say that as the VR technology, continues to explode, there's going to be so much demand for content.
Yes. Yep.
So.
Yep. Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Anything else happen there?
I got to tell you, one thing that wasn't interesting was the keynote. Oh, my God. That was one of the most 20 minutes ever.
I watched 12 minutes of it.
I know. See, that's about it. I think that's about as far as I made it to. Yeah. It's good night,
everybody. I watched the whole thing live, and I just read the coverage afterwards.
So. Yes, exactly.
I'm glad I missed it live, actually.
Yeah. It's usually the best way to do it. So.
Wow.
All right. Okay. I guess that one of these last stories here on Google. So, Steve, this secure beacon deal. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, one of the biggest issues in the Internet of Things space that everybody's buzzing about is security, and especially after there's been discussions from the head of the NSA. Can't remember his name right this second, but about how. How IoT will allow entree into home networks and business networks and so on in new ways, because there's just so many possible openings where stuff isn't secure enough. And so Google obviously recognizes this, especially around Bluetooth communications, as Bluetooth has become lower power and its reach has grown. It's become more and more used, and as a consequence, the need for Bluetooth connections and so on to be secure is really, really important, especially if they're used for beacons. And so there's this ephemeral ID platform transmit communications protocol that Google developed, and they're open sourcing the code so anybody can use it. So other beacon providers could do it. And so really Apple's iBeacon has been in the market for a while, and that's the big one. And obviously Google sees this with the Nest acquisition and all of that, that obviously security is huge, and having it be open source as opposed to Apple's closed source means that others are going to get into the beacon space in a big way, and they're going to have this protocol to use for security. So this is really a big deal.
So this story in Business Insider, they have a chart that shows the adoption of beacons, and it's obviously on a big upslope, but most of it looks still to be retail. What are the non-retail applications for this?
Well, this chart that's in here actually shows the cybersecurity market overall. So in blue is just IoT devices, and then PCs, the mobile network, connected TVs, which a lot of people are concerned about because Samsung, for example, had this listening capability in their TVs, wearables, and then the connected car. And of course, the FBI came out with a warning just in the last 2 weeks about hackable cars. So the auto industry is all up and, they're all freaked out about the possibility that people won't feel secure in their cars, or that people will die because their network in their cars or their computer systems are not secure. So this really is the cybersecurity market overall.
I was talking about the other chart, the one that above it, if you scroll up.
Oh.
Because it has retail and non-retail applications of beacons.
Yes. And
you don't really hear about anything outside of retail. I guess technically what the Vikings are doing in the stadium, that would be non-retail.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see how much is retail versus other stuff. But we're at the very early stages of this technology.
Yeah. Well, hey, thanks for pointing out that other chart. I was scrolled down the page.
Look at that.
I will next time I will scroll up the page. But you know what? Can I just ask, just sort of throw this out because I don't know the answer. What are the other location tracking technologies location identifying technologies that are there besides beacons? So Mall of America, for example, has their app, and is this Wi-Fi triangulation, or how are they going about setting location? Do you know?
I don't know. I know that Disney, they have this RFID band that you can either purchase or they include with your deal, depending on what you get.
No kidding.
Yeah, and it shows the location of the the visitor. And they're able to do really cool stuff with it. Like, so imagine you take your small child to Disney, and you say, oh, by the way, she's really into, this particular princess. And they could triangulate you in the park, and that actress could come and meet your daughter.
Oh,
and say,
cool.
Hey, Betty, whatever. So they do stuff like that with it. It's also used for fast passes, but it's using RFID. It's not using, right?
Okay. So they've got transmitters in various places. Great.
Yep.
Well, guys, I think it's time for...
What's your cool thing of the week,
cool
Steve?
Cool thing of the week. Oh, me?
Yeah, you get to go first.
I get to go first?
Yeah, you don't rarely go first.
You're well, always cool so, thing of the week. So there,
last one go first.
There have been some times when, in fact, when Graham was on the podcast, he talked about this one snap-in drive that you could put into the SD card slot, and it was a little flash drive, and it would be an extra storage. It would mount on your desktop like another hard drive on your MacBook Air, and it was cool. That was really nice. But this TARDISC, it's called TARDISC, TARDISC, is really interesting, and they're taking a page out of Apple's Fusion drives. And those were the drives where there was a small SSD, solid state drive, that was super fast. That's where the operating system sat, and that's where the applications sat, and utilities and all that kind of stuff. And then your files would actually be on the spinning Winchester drive, or the and so it actually made the whole computer experience feel a lot faster because it basically multiplexed these two drives together. And so for you, you saw them as just one big hard drive, but in reality, it was keeping this stuff on the SSD. So apps would launch super fast, and the operating system, the system would boot up fast and all of that. The problem with the little snap-in drive that Graham loved was the fact that it was an extra drive, right? It didn't really do anything. I'm giving you a bigger hard drive. TAR disks solved that problem. So they have created an implementation of a hybrid drive, which combines that little snap-in drive into the SD slot, and it couples it with your internal drive to provide one single managed logical volume on your MacBook. And it works with the Air and the MacBook Pros and so on. And as Tim pointed out before we started recording the podcast, the 128 gig is $149, but the 256
kind of
is
reasonable, you know?
Yeah. But the 256 is $399.
That seems a little spendy.
Yeah. You know, most of these, I've been looking at 256 gig versions for a while, and this $399 price point seems to be sticking.
So I only got about 17 seconds into this video before the show. When you put it in, does it just, you know, add space to your drive? So you don't have to do anything else. You don't have to reformat or anything that
you don't have to reformat, but you've got to load their software.
Ah, okay.
And so their software basically is, changing. I haven't dug into it too deep.
I think the software is Pear, P-E-A-R, I believe.
Is a takeoff on pairing.
Yep. Get it.
Yeah. They're adding to it, and then they're making it look transparent to the user.
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct.
So is TAR disk, are they trying to play off the whole TARDIS thing? The whole Doctor Who deal? Is that what they're doing?
I don't know the answer to that.
Because if you call it TAR disk, it is sort of a play off the Doctor Who thing. And if you use Pear software, it's kind of just of the iCarly thing with everything was instead of an apple, it was a pear.
Well, you know, it might have more to do with, you know, the GNU TAR.
What's a GNU TAR?
Well, GNU is the, you know, it's the Free Software Association, the GNU operating system.
Oh, okay.
And TAR comes from, it used to stand for Tape Archiver.
Yeah.
You know, TAR.
I'm going to go with the Doctor Who thing.
I thought it was a take on TARDIS, the computer that was in Interstellar.
It could be. Could be. Let's skip all this. Phil, tell us about your cool thing.
Well, I got a couple of cool things, and I'm going to try one or both of them today. With the Apple Watch, I haven't done this yet, but I'm sort of trying to spend more time on the golf course. So there are a couple of golf apps that now have an integration with the Apple Watch that help with the GPS scoring and that sort of thing. So I'm actually going to try two of them. One is called Golf Shot, and the other one is called Hole 19. There are a list of them on the App Store now, but I read some, you know, reviews that was digging. So I'm going to give those two a shot just to see what those are like. So, you know, not only will it keep the score on your phone, but you can put it in your Apple Watch glance and see what your yardage is and that sort of thing. So I'm kind of looking forward to giving that a try. So those are the two kind of cool thing test drives for me right now.
Well, I'd have to look and see how high I can make the number of shots go.
Well, I think so it's probably pretty round. Unlimited. I hope it, because it's going to be high for me. I can tell you that.
Well, you know, hole 19, of course, is the bar.
Yes.
And so that's why when you put that in there before I clicked on it, I thought, oh, I wonder if this is like a drinking app.
Nice bar,
of some kind.
Yeah.
after golf. Anyway.
So. So I'll let you know how things go next week. I know you'll be on pins and needles on that one. So.
Yeah. Tim, what's yours, buddy?
So we've talked about Zivix in the past. They're a local company that's done the Jamstick, which is the iPad pairing app and hardware piece that allows you to learn how to play guitar. So they've taken that that idea and put it on a wristband. They call it Air Jams, and it's for air guitar. So it's you take the Air Jams and you pair it with your iPad or your iPhone, I would imagine it would probably still work. And then you play air guitar and it plays the instrument, and you can add, you know, you can jam with several people at once if they had these air jams. They're on Kickstarter right now. They've already raised $20,000 in the past couple of days of their $30,000 goal. They're right now, they're $39. to get the air jams. Mm-hmm. And watch the video. It's actually pretty interesting.
It's pretty fun. Yeah, it is. It really is.
So this could make you realize that you even suck at air guitar. That's not good.
Seems like it's pretty easy.
Yeah.
But this might be a gateway thing for a kid. So they start with air guitar, and then they might want to learn how to play the guitar, and then they've got the jam stick.
There you go.
Well, you know, somebody posted on Facebook. I just saw it on my wall here a couple weeks ago. It was shots of coffee shops and funny signs and different funny things. One of them said, there was a sign up on the wall that said, "Free air guitars, take one." And then there was like a slotted thing where there was nothing in there.
That's great.
I thought that was pretty funny. Anyway, well,
I did not realize Air Jams is the official air guitar of USAG. Did you know there's a US Air Guitar Association?
Oh, geez. I did not.
There's something for every, you know, every, yep. Right? There's an association for it.
Yeah.
Well, it is kind of cool. Check that out. Events coming up. I think the big one is where IoT Fuse is
Friday.
So
we'll be live streaming both of the keynotes. I set up a live streaming through YouTube, which, by way, could very well have been my cool thing of the week. They have come so far since I introduced it last summer.
Good.
I'm deeply impressed. That's the good news. The bad news?
Make it the cool thing of the week next week after it works.
Yeah.
All right.
And let us know how it works.
Then I'll just shut up now. Okay. Yeah, otherwise, pretty much everything that's in there is the same. And I guess we're going to be, Phil and I anyway, are going to be at Mini Bar next Saturday, correct?
Yep. Yep.
And we will be doing the podcast from there in some way, shape, or form. And Tim will be, he's going to go, visit his grandpa in prison. And or something. Nope. I don't know. But anyway.
Big day next Saturday.
Yeah. We're not going to mention because we don't want the helicopters flying over.
Yeah, I know. That's always so. All right. We'll
paparazzi. We will. Sorry, we missed that.
I said I'll be back the week after next with bells on.
Excellent. Okay. Excellent.
Good deal. So we'll talk about what we find this next week on
the Minivate Gang podcast.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. 2 weeks.